You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 20th, 2017, and we live in the era where bad people do bad things on the internet.
God damn it.
I knew this whole internet thing was a fucking...
Damn it, Al Gore!
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Jester.
And I'm George Alborg.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. Usually we try to keep it pretty posy.
Yeah, we like to be on the happy side.
Yeah, but today we're going to talk about, it felt like a rough week. Maybe a rough week and a half.
It's been a little hard.
Been a rough week. So we're going to talk about some people behaving badly. Mm-hmm. And we're going to discuss our thoughts about it and maybe try to find a ray of light here and there.
Yeah. We should say there will be some more adult thing. So if you listen to this podcast with kids around.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Which, what are you doing anyway? We're already infecting your children.
That's true. Our filthy mouths have already warped their fragile little minds.
That's true.
We're going to be talking about some stuff around racism and stuff. So here we go. Where do we start first?
Why don't we start with the Overwatch stuff?
Okay.
Because, you know, you and I, we still play some Overwatch.
I actually just fired up Overwatch for the first time in a long time yesterday.
Did you win?
I did.
And did you crown your victory with racist epithets at your opponents?
Yeah, all I did was start insulting everybody's race and ethnicity.
Perfect. So last week, Jeff Kaplan released another one of the Overwatch developer updates. Mm-hmm. Now, normally these developer updates are like fun. Hey, guys, guess what's coming to Overwatch? We're nerfing Roadhog again. and for the most part, like, they're really enjoyable and they talk about changes and what's to come. Mm-hmm. And this time, Jeff took some time to talk about toxicity in Overwatch, which is interesting, I think, because normally the developer updates are exactly that, right? Mm. They're updates about things that are in development. They're more on the technical side. Sometimes they're on balance. A lot of times they're on balancing issues, and sometimes they're teases for future content.
Yeah.
This was one that was much more... It was actually a little weird, to be honest. Like, I think Jeff came off as really kind of sad and frustrated in videos where normally he's like, oh, we're really excited to see you play this and this and that and stuff. And instead it's like, hey, guys, the community is kind of toxic right now. We know it's toxic. It's really exhausting for us. We have to take the time to work on it. Here's what our plans are. But please don't be mean to each other, please.
I think it was be nice to each other.
Right.
And we're all here to have fun.
Yeah.
And these videos, even to begin with, are pretty unique because they're just one person talking at the camera. Mm-hmm. In a world where we have so much gameplay footage and fancy editing and stuff, it's already kind of strange to have one of the main ways that they release patch notes be a guy talking at the camera.
Dude, I mean, no joke, it's like modern fireside chats.
Yeah. Yeah, we gather around and we tighten our belts.
We turn on the radio. Yeah, oh, Jeff Kaplan's on the old tube.
Papa Kaplan. Yeah, and I think some of the things that he said were pretty interesting because you don't hear it that often.
Yeah.
Especially from someone at a developer as large as Blizzard.
Right.
I mean, you hear it on the independent level because trying to manage a community is a full-time job, and if you only have 20 people at your studio, that's a huge amount of work. But we tend not to hear explicit discussion of toxicity from a huge developer.
Yeah,
it's just more like managing the community. It's not explicitly saying, hey, we know some things are just flat out bad.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain fear that like Voldemort style, if you say its name, you give it power kind of thing. So there's a tendency of like, let's just work on the systems to make sure that people who are making each other feel good are given the tools to spread their love and we'll make a strong community that way, as opposed to let's create systems where we punish people.
Yeah.
The fact is, when we think about publishers' role in shaping community behavior, in some ways, it is kind of like the way that states govern their own citizen behavior. Mm. In the way that, like, look, I think to some extent, the idea of talking openly, say, about, like, the police is a weird thing, because we're then admitting that we live in a society that is potentially dangerous, and these people have to be here, and we as a society are, like, to some extent, we're failing because the police exist, right? Because the police exist, it must mean that bad things happen and we need some sort of violent force. And so it's all this, like, there's a necessary sense of state failure when you think about the police from, like, a sociological perspective. And I think to some extent that applies when we think about policing behavior in video game spaces. Because if you say, look, we have these tools in place to address player behavior, it means you're a set of your players are behaving so badly that it requires that. So I think it's kind of brazen for them to come out and say, look, we admit this is a huge issue. It's so big an issue that, like, we need to take time out of our regularly scheduled programming to talk about, like, why that's a problem.
He talked about a lot of the discussion centered around what they do to manage the community, what your reporting of bad behavior does, like what the outcome of the reporting is. What the impact of having to work on that is to the game. What did you think about his discussion around this? You know, we want to push new features, but this community management is necessitating that we move engineers onto that versus working on new features.
I have two feelings about this, because on one side, I think that, and I've heard this online as well, like, there is a compelling argument to say that it's a bit of a cop-out, right? Like, if you really are saying that, oh, no, we don't want to focus on this, but we have to, and this is your guys' fault, don't be assholes, you're taking away from the game, it's kind of a cop-out, because, look, if it really is a problem, then you should have a dedicated staff to this. You don't want to pull some random guy and be like, hey, you're doing this now, right? Like, think of that in any other way, shape, or form in any other company, right? If you have a guy whose main job is, like, you know, you're a dentist, but, uh-oh, we need someone to, like, work the printer because it's busted again, do you really want to take the... Okay, I'm bad at dental analogies, but
I mean, I think the more apt analogy is technology companies, where you have some engineers that are site reliability engineers, and you have some engineers that are working on the core product, and you have some engineers that are working on the user-facing side of the product.
Right.
But in a small company, you can make the compelling argument that the more problems we have on the reliability side, the fewer features we can push.
Yes.
And so he's kind of making a similar argument where if we just have to keep the lights on, our engineering efforts are going to be, it's a zero-sum game,
yeah, it's spread ultimately. Thin,
and there's going to be trade-offs. But also, it's Blizzard Activision.
Exactly, so, like, dude. Like, they're making so much money. Like, do you really need to, like, poor Jim in engineering is like, oh, I got to worry. Like, hire people, hire a behavior team.
Yeah.
Like, have a staff that their sole job is to focus on this and think about it. Like, even if you're building a team from the ground up using in-house talent and then hiring to replace that talent from where they came from, even that's a potential solution to create this diverse team with different backgrounds to address long-term player behavior in your company, right? So I understand that approach. However, I think a larger part of me thinks this is a good way of framing it, because I think that there's a large group of people that cause problems to be worse in online communities because they make the bullshit argument that's like, well, just mute them. Just ignore them. Look, it doesn't bother me, so why bother? It's not that important. You know, like, just report and shut up and stop complaining. You know, I think that approach to community behavior of like, well, just turn your mic off is not actually conducive for making things better. I think you're actively suggesting that people not play the game in the most fun possible way there is, which is to share it with other people and talk and have fun together in a safe space, right? You're also not creating a welcoming place. If your first experience in an online community is one in where you're encountering a bunch of toxic assholes, and then you go, hey, why is this community so toxic? And someone says, stop complaining and just mute all. Why would you stay? Like, oh, I'm playing with a bunch of people that are assholes, but I'm just ignoring the fact that they're assholes does not make a good, healthy community. And I think by Kaplan and Blizzard coming out and saying, look, there's a real cost to everybody because of this. I think that's a pretty powerful statement, right? Like, to say we're all in this together and you can't just ignore it, I hope gets some people off of the fence to seriously think about the community toxicity problem, their role in it and perpetuating it or addressing it, and how they want their publishers to deal with things like that. Because there really is a real cost to this. And it's not just an engineer cost that I think could be dealt with in a better way, but it's one of, like, you know, everybody suffers for one reason or another.
Yeah. It draws a more subtle distinction between what is an online multiplayer game where you're essentially using humans as stand-ins for better AI versus a true community where you're actually interacting with other people.
Yes.
Like, the way that I play multiplayer is basically humans are very expensive versions of bots that I get, that I get to play against.
Yeah.
But it's because of what you described. That
Who
that,
programmed this bot? It only plays Hanzo. What's the deal?
I mean, it's that mute all culture that gives rise to that.
Yes.
And if you didn't have to mute all, you actually wouldn't be playing with other faux bots. You'd be playing with other people.
Yes.
And that and there's an argument to be made that that's more satisfying because there would be more interaction. There would be, you'd have the, even the potential to make friends, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's a good point.
Definitely. I also think that there's always a concern, I think, when publishers, especially large publishers, are trying to push the work off on others. Mm-hmm. You know, ending that thing of like, hey, maybe next time you want to be an asshole, don't be an asshole. Mm. Okay, sure. But like, look, there are people who are 100% legitimate assholes.
Yeah.
They're not there to have fun in the same way that we're there to have fun.
Yeah.
They're there to have fun by making people salty and mad and upset. Like, there are, I think, legitimately bad people on the internet who do want to actively spoil the game. Mm. And when they've had their fun or they're not allowed to spoil it anymore, they'll move on to something else.
Yeah. I was thinking about that in terms of his discussion around, what did he say, 400,000 people have had some sort of disciplinary action?
480,000.
And that's
almost
over,
half a million people.
And that, so Overwatch has been around for about a year and a half now or so. So yeah, so in a year and a half, there's been almost half a million people that have had some sort of disciplinary action taken on them.
That's probably like half the population of Rhode Island, right? I don't know how many
people. It's more than Montana.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think, one, that was surprising to me. Two, assuming that you think that the numbers are true, I think it speaks more about what the feedback system is. Because I've definitely reported people in Overwatch and then gotten matched with them the exact next match.
Oh, God. And why does that happen? Like, if I block someone, I want to never see them again.
I don't know. But I think that's, if we are to meet him halfway at his, okay, let's think about behavior more philosophically rather than, you know, technically, then they have to meet us halfway by showing us with more transparency what the actual technical rules are.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is why I think a lot of people have issues with, like, League of Legends reporting system sometimes, right? Which is failing in a lot of regards. Like, the number of people that have offensive names and racist, hateful names is crazy high.
Yeah.
The amount of people that are still toxic is very, very high. Like, I don't think it's necessarily gone down. I believe Riot when they say that their reporting system somewhat works and that people who get reported do get banned. But look, there are people that are in the community that are frequently toxic, that stream online and have thousands of fans.
Yeah.
And they get reported and it's big news. And that's the only time we ever really hear about how effective that system is. I think knowing that your report helped punish someone who was genuinely ruining your game feels good, and that positive reinforcement will encourage you to report people again, you know, and conversely reward people, right? What if you kept saying, oh, this guy's really friendly, and you got a notification that's like, hey, that person just won an honor award because you and 30 other people said they were super fun to play with.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it would encourage you to participate in a thing like that. There'd be more feedback knowing that how you voice your opinion about the community matters.
That is kind of interesting. I've never played a game where there was a carrot and not just a stick.
Yeah.
And Overwatch is even in the gameplay where you can upvote people for their performance in match, like, they're almost there.
Yeah.
They're almost to the point where you can report positive report instead of negative report.
So League of Legends made a change to their honor system now where when you are rewarded, you will eventually unlock banners and actual, like, essentially loot chests. Like, if you are frequently praised for having good behavior, they will increase, you know, the amount of things that you get in game, like aesthetic items and stuff.
It's interesting.
But again, like, I don't think just positive reinforcement will fix toxicity problems because there are people there who just don't give a shit about, you know, they've already unlocked all of their favorite Zarya skins or whatever, you know?
Now it's time to go back to Hanzo.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, let's talk about let's continue the moderation discussion.
Yes.
And let's talk about Steam.
Oh God, I feel like I've come to a point where I hate talking about Steam, man. I just feel like it's such a cesspool. It's like, I feel like we're in a place right now where everyone is begrudgingly, maybe not begrudgingly, but it just feels like Valve has lost the moral high ground that they once held.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just sort of are in this state where, like, it's a monopoly over the PC gaming market in terms of digital purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really anything we can do about it.
I mean, I think they've definitely... I think it feels like they've maybe not lost it, but they've just abdicated. You know, they just walked away. And we've set up this system and this machine is running and now we're just not going to touch it.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's...
This is like God has abandoned us. This is like
the divine watchmaker, the divine clockmaker has just left.
Yeah. It feels like we're in a Mad Max world on Steam and Steam forums, right? Like how many games get, you know, Steam review armies voting them down and stuff? Like, it's crazy.
I mean, I think this all came off of an article where someone was discussing
Brendan Sinclair.
Yeah, Brendan Sinclair was discussing just deleting his Steam account and criticizing Valve for allowing hate groups and hate speech to freely and openly conduct themselves on Steam.
And, like, hate games. Like, he found one group that had multiple people reporting it called Nazi Recruitment Group Order Number 1.
Yeah.
There's a whites-only group that says, therefore, any fellow white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and anyone who just hates colored people.
Yeah.
Like, just openly being on Steam. And so I looked at these... And they are shut down now after this article was published. But at the time of publishing, they were not. Yeah. So it's like, oh, only by pointing them out in a public space are they get shut down, you know? And I also looked at some of the forums where people were asking people to report them.
Mm.
And some of the responses were just like, you know, oh, okay, just report and shut up and don't make a forum post about it. Like, you want to engage in a witch hunt, you know? Guys, like... Witch hunts are okay if they're actual witches. You know what I mean? It's not a witch hunt if they're bathing themselves in blood and dancing naked in the moonlight to the Dark Lord Satan, you know? Like,
I mean, it's just, it's people, I don't know. It's hilarious that people even use the witch hunt analogy because the whole point of that was that these people are innocent.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, these, you can't, if you have a swastika on your Steam page, then you're not a witch. You're just an actual Nazi.
Exactly.
And yeah, but the whole point is that Steam has Valve has an incredibly sophisticated technology stack where they could easily see words that pop up on their forums or easily see images that get uploaded and instantly ban them from a technical perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, and if the fucking iPhone X can recognize my face and log me in, Valve can recognize a fucking swastika.
I mean, yeah, it's not... It's... And Valve's whole MO is to try to devote the minimum number of humans to this task as necessary.
Yeah.
But this isn't... You can feed in a list of 100 words that you know are only used for offensive purposes.
Yep.
And get a huge chunk of the toxicity that is happening on the platform. It's just, it's hard to understand why that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Because, you know, I think one of the responses that you often see, and this comes up, hey, guess what? We're in Berkeley where, like, this argument about free speech happens all the goddamn time, right? Where people go, oh, you know, let them organize if they're having those conversations inside, whatever. But at the same time, like, Valve is providing a platform for people to engage in this. Like, look, if a Nazi wants to create a group, they'll make their own website. They have. Yeah. They exist. There are Nazi websites that they host on their own whatever servers, you know? Like, does Valve really need to give them the space to do that, creating, you know, opportunities for people to, you know, organize or harass or whatever? Yeah. Or even just make it feel like this weird, like, uncomfortable space for people when they don't have to. Like, it's pretty easy to address, right? And they have a policy that's specifically like, hey, we don't allow hatred. Mm-hmm. We're just not willing to put in any effort to actually stop it.
Yeah. It makes me think about my Steam usage specifically, about what I do on Steam.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I ever go to the discussions or to the forums. God,
yeah,
or
me neither. Yeah.
And so I'm trying to think through.
Now I know why.
Yeah, I mean, why would I do it? But this whole thing of, like, review bombing someone on Steam, I'm not actually sure what the what the outcome is. I mean, does that make it harder for you to get listed on the front page? Does it I don't know what the...
I mean, I don't know, right? Like, I presume there's an algorithm that certainly surfaces games that are highly rated as trending.
Yeah.
Or stack ranks them. Like, oh, you liked this game, therefore you like this one.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Certainly, there are people who use Steam reviews to decide whether or not to make a purchase.
Yeah.
And if they look and they don't bother reading the contents of the review or where they came from, they might see, oh, this game got a notoriously low rating.
Yeah.
I mean, the most recent example was the Steam bombing of the Camposanto Firewatch game, which at this point, like, look, if you haven't played Firewatch, you're probably not going to play Firewatch, so it's not super important.
But you probably should play Firewatch.
You should play. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... It's... there. You can see the argument where... I think certain websites did this a few years ago, where there's this shift away from comment sections.
Yeah.
Or even burying comment sections under, like, two or three more clicks to even get to them.
Yeah.
We've gotten to a point where the discussion on the internet is handled by different platforms, so not everyone has to have their own thing.
Yep.
And so at this point, maybe you can just get rid of a whole swath of shit. You know, why give people another platform to do it on?
Yeah.
It already exists. You know, I already don't look at it.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
I don't know. I mean, it's... the other thing is that even though Valve does have a monopoly, I feel like there's probably never, in the past maybe 5 years or so, the alternatives have never been stronger. So Humble is out there.
Yeah.
GOG, Itch. I mean, there's one or two others. I forget which one.
It's like digital platforms.
Yeah. There's more than there's more than there were 5 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the rise of all that stuff.
On Live.
Oh, man. Does that still exist?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. Or even the consoles. They all have their digital platforms. I mean, it's something where, in a weird way, Steam is more vulnerable now than it has been for a long time.
Yeah.
So there is an opportunity. If you do want to vote with your dollar, you can go to GOG or you can go to Itch and buy, you know, you can get, I'm sure you could get Tacoma on Itch.
Yeah, that's true.
I got it on Steam, though, because that's just like the default of what I go to. But maybe it's more responsible to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, it's hard to know, too. Like, Valve makes so much goddamn money. Like, it certainly feels like a futile effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to go back to publishers, I think that's where it's always interesting, right, to see, like, who has the biggest stake in regulating how these online game spaces function, you know? Like, Steam can get away with it because they figure, well, only neo-Nazis will go to the neo-Nazi page to some extent.
Right.
And if they, you know, if enough people want to stop them, then they will. Otherwise, we'll just let it be, like, free reign kind of thing. Whereas publishers, like, they want to create that safe space. And so it's like a constant war. And Valve is just like, well, we'll let the community do it and we'll let publishers handle it and we'll, you know, leave ourselves out of it.
Speaking of publishers handling it, talk to me about the most controversial armor in Destiny.
Oh, yeah. So recently, there was a piece of armor. I forget what the armor was called. I have it, too. I can, like, bring up my profile.
So he's arm...
It's like arm gauntlet. So there's a piece of art on the arm that looks conspicuously similar to what is commonly seen as a white... It's not commonly seen. It is a white supremacist... online flag called the Kekistan flag, which is, God, the fact that Kek has been taken by, like, online white supremacists is insane to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
And this was recently discovered. Bungie formally apologized. They launched their own investigation into what this piece of armor was and why it happened to look so close to this. They said that it was unintentional and that after research, they had based it on a couple other things and it was pure coincidence. I have to say, if you do look at the flag, it does look so similar that it's hard to believe it wasn't intentional by some artist. I think maybe we could take Bungie's word for it and say it was a total accident. To that end, they are patching it out. So they've already patched the ability to see other people with it, even though it still drops and you can still wear it. And then I believe in the next patch, they'll be patching out that visual entirely.
It's crazy.
I think the other thing that is the sort of unspoken reality of regulating game space and community is that we are now living in an era where, like, fascist and white supremacist rhetoric is much more public and open, you know, where people could be saying, like, really sort of hate monger things out loud in public spaces, in political spaces. And that empowers people to be vocal in all communities.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that there's probably some fucking racist knitting circle group somewhere. And all these other like knitters are like, man, we really need to stop this like racist knitting group.
Yeah, that's true. It's, I mean, it also is an environment where the cycle of creation and appropriation is highly accelerated.
Yeah.
So you can see a meme become a symbol of a racist
subsection
of people within the course of a month.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that's just what it is. And so this stuff, I mean, whatever. The arm, you know, the arm design, it looks like some sci-fi crap. Like there's
like razor lines. Blades on the elbow. Yeah, you
exactly.
Know?
there's some lines and some weird future looking angles. And I could see that. Okay, maybe that was a pure accident, but it also is just that it's so similar to other things that have been appropriated that you're constantly going to have this very accelerated cycle of creation, claiming, and then reclamation.
Yeah.
In a condensed time frame.
I think publishers have to be on guard quite a bit, you know? Like I think there's something to say for games being a place for the underprivileged for many, many years.
Yeah.
Such to the point that it's actually not all that surprising that some underprivileged individuals have been radicalized by nationalistic and racist rhetoric and now find themselves empowered within that space, right? Yeah. That to me, though, means that it's even more important for publishers today than it was a decade ago to really have a strong stance and address some of these issues in their spaces, knowing that if they want to continue to be a space for the underprivileged, and that includes people of color and people of different like gender identities coming into these spaces that could be much more toxic today because of the political environment than they were 10 years ago, means that, you know, it's super important that they address it, because otherwise it's like, you know, like if we go to games to some extent to get away from some of the harsh political realities of our time, and then we find that recreated there even by accident, you know, that's something that can be hurtful, and is why publishers have to be so very vigilant today.
I mean, good on Bungie for naming it.
Oh yeah,
you know, they said, hey, this was not something that we want to do, we're gonna patch it out and then finalize the patch later on,
and they reacted very quickly. It wasn't like, oh, what, that wasn't intentional, let me look into it, you know? Like, it was, hey, we don't want this, clearly, you know what I mean? And it's the same with Bungie, right? When there's just straight up like, look, if you're a bad person in Overwatch, we do not want you in Overwatch. Mm. Like, I think that's a powerful message, for sure.
It seems like it seems like the way that Bungie is handling it, they tweeted from the corporate Bungie account, and then, what's his face, the CEO of Bungie also made a statement on it, where I get the sense that maybe their approach to community is a little bit more hands-on than something like, or at least more transparent than something like Blizzard or especially Steam, where the appeal isn't just be nice to each other. The appeal is, you know, maybe you're a racist or maybe that you hate people, but know that the game that you ostensibly like, Destiny made by Bungie, is a company that explicitly disagrees with that.
Yeah, totally.
I wish I had a better answer other than, I guess we should all rip our Ethernet cords out of our computers.
No, man.
And only buy things from Itch. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our website. Come on down and give us a review.
Cool. Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.